What's up, spookies?
Hi, spookies.
You,
Spot?
What?
Do you identify as a spooky?
Obviously.
Ah.
I feel like you and I, it's kind of a given for a start. And also, like, we're the OG spookies.
Oh, okay. Cute.
So.
What were you going to say I interrupted you before?
I don't remember. I started with the word you. Maybe I just want to say you.
Yeah, me. I agree. This is Spooky Bitch Gang. It's a horror podcast where sometimes we talk about social issues, sometimes we talk about feminism, and sometimes we just talk about dumb bitch stuff because all of it is important.
Yeah, especially the dumb bitch stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
How are you going?
I'm good. I got nothing to report.
I don't have much to report. I started watching, you know what? People always think that I'm like into true crime because I like horror movies.
Same.
Everyone's always like gobsmacked. I guess also because I'm a woman that I don't love true crime, but like I fucking hate, like I'm really terrified of death. I don't know about you, but I'm so scared of death.
And also there's something about sort of like just sitting there working on your spreadsheets while you listen to like the story of Sharon getting like brutally raped and don't laugh.
Sharon.
She's poor Sharon and like struggled with pantyhose and
yeah.
Like what are you
doing? I know. And then like having that as a flex to be like, yeah, I like to eat breakfast while I watch like crime scene stuff. It's like, okay, something's wrong with you. Like, you're not supposed to like that. But anyway, I'm not really about it because I'm constantly thinking about my own demise and I have, like, already too many panic attacks as it is. So if I ever watch, like, a true crime, I start to, like, I imagine myself constantly in the beginning of one of those shows and I feel like I'm the CCTV footage and they're like, she was never heard from again.
How embarrassing.
I know. Like, you always have to be, like, ready. It's kind of like how Tyra said you always – any photo you take, even your passport photo has to be, like, so hot because you always have to be ready to show someone, like, whatever photo you have on hand. You have to always be ready to do a photo shoot.
When you go to a go-see.
Yeah, that's why – well, sometimes you might sit next to someone on a flight and they might want to see, like, a picture of you and you show them your passport and you get booked. Or that's why she would always do things like you have to run up 8,000 flights of stairs and then you have to do a photo shoot because you have to always be fucking ready to go. I feel the same way about, you know, the CCTV footage that's going to exist of you after you die. Like, you just always have to be, like, kind of a baddie because you might get abducted.
Yeah. What if you're picking your nose in, like, the last known footage of you?
That's really embarrassing. But the reason I brought this up was because I kept hearing people talk about this Jeffrey Dahmer show with, what's his name? Evan Peters or whatever, the hot guy. Is that his name? Evan? It's Evan someone.
Oh, yeah.
That Ryan Murphy keeps putting him in stuff.
Is he hot?
I think he's hot. Okay. I don't know. Maybe he's not. My mom said he's not hot too. Let us know if you think Evan Peters is hot.
Definitely not your mom's type.
No. But anyway, he's in that Jeffrey Dahmer show. So I like watched the first episode of that and it's not for me. It's really not for me.
I didn't watch it, but I saw the trailer or whatever on Netflix. And I was like, I don't feel comfortable with Ryan Murphy specifically making a show about actual murders.
I get that, but also I feel like you don't feel comfortable with Ryan Murphy making anything.
Yeah.
You just hate him.
Yeah, I do actually.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I felt like I did something bad where I was watching the show and I think it's pretty like it's drawn from the facts. Like it kind of it's pretty factual.
Okay.
And so and I didn't realize that. And there was this plot point where some police officers find these Polaroids in his house. And I was like, huh, I wonder if that was true. So I Googled it and fuck, I didn't expect to see these horrible images. I'm never going to remove them from my brain. So anyone out here, I'm sure there's a lot of overlap with the spookies who are into horror movies and the spookies who are into true crime. I'm sure there are some freaks out there.
You just told them there's something wrong with them, those guys.
You're crazy. I don't know how you do it. You mustn't be scared of death. You must walk around every day just living life to its fullest and that's scary to me, honestly. I don't trust it.
Do you think that true crime podcasts are chuggy?
What's that?
Chuggy is like a live, laugh, love, like that kind of like millennial lack of taste.
I don't know. I feel like I don't want to criticize them too harshly because they are mostly like the demographic is mostly like women.
Yeah.
And I'm
just like
so
chuggy things.
Oh, okay. Maybe I just don't like that term then. But I've never heard it before, so I don't know.
It's a good term,
though. Why haven't I heard it?
I don't know. I was on Facebook earlier, and I was getting a lot of those, like, life hack videos where it's like, the hack doesn't actually solve any problem that any real person would have.
Yeah.
And I was like, have I become choogy? Is that why I'm getting this content?
Those life hacks are the modern version of those infomercials where they'd be like, oh, this person's always spilling their chips. Like, you need this product. Yeah,
totally.
And I feel like a life hack is a better way of doing it because you kind of bring it into your own home rather than, like, having to buy something.
I ate chips with chopsticks today. That was, like, kind of great.
Like crisps or hot chips?
No, like hot chips.
Firstly, why?
I had the chopsticks because of something else I was eating and there were chips there. So I was
so jealous. What the fuck were you eating?
I was eating some Japanese food.
Oh, my God. And chips?
Yeah.
I want to do that right now. I'm so hungry for chips.
You don't like Japanese food?
No, I just want to eat the chips with chopsticks.
Oh, okay.
I like some Japanese food, don't I?
Yeah, I remember like you saying, yeah, okay, yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
That's something.
Yeah.
Anyway, this has gone off the rails. do you have anything you want to say?
No, I got nothing.
Cool.
I think we should do the episode.
Yeah, well, we have a mini-sode today, so we might as well just get the fuck into it.
And I'm really excited about this one because I think not a lot of people know about this movie.
This one's homegrown.
All right, let's do the music.
Today we're talking about Patrick.
Yeah, we're talking about Patrick. You know, the name Patrick always makes me think of Charlotte Crosby, the host of MTV's Just Tattoo of Us.
Oh.
Who was originally on Geordie Shore. She pronounces the name Patrick as Patrick.
Oh.
So that's pretty cute.
Yeah, that is cute. They don't say that in this movie.
No, it's Patrick.
It's from the 70s, so I feel like a lot of people have very, like, British-y kind of accents.
Yeah, I was reading about that today, actually. So this is an Australian movie written by Everett de Roche, who also wrote one of my favorite Australian horror movies, Long Weekend, the original, not the horrible remake. He did it like a sex comedy. I forget what it was called, something like Eskimo Nell. But anyway, outside of Australia, people fucking hated it. But I feel like that's true of, like, every Australian movie that, like, outside of Australia, no one gives a fuck.
Except for genre movies.
Yeah, but it's only, like, years after the fact that that happens, right?
I think Patrick was, like, pretty well received overseas and did really shit here.
Yeah, it was an absolute flop here. Everett de Roche. No, it wasn't him. The director of this film.
Oh, Richard Franklin.
Yeah, I was reading, made that earlier film and then was like, no one liked it. So let's have the people in this movie speak the Queen's English.
Oh,
and see how well that translates. That obviously did not pay off.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. And they also made Road Games together.
Yes.
And just kind of Australian horror royalty behind this movie, including producer Tony Ginnane.
Mm-hmm.
Who made, like, Turkey Shoot and stuff. I've always loved this movie. I used to have a poster of it at my desk.
Yeah, I remember that. What happened to that poster?
I think I changed desks, so now I've got a different poster.
Yeah.
But I just think it's such a great movie, and I think it's underappreciated. It's a bit of a cult classic, but still I don't think it gets the attention it deserves. It's kind of like a pioneer of Ozploitation.
Totally. And, like, it's one of those ones where we know that Quentin Tarantino, for example, loves Ozploitation, and he referenced this movie in Kill Bill Volume 1 with Uma Thurman spitting when she's, she's been shot in the head. She's in the hospital. So, that's bona fides, right?
Yeah. What more do you want?
So, do you reckon that a lot of people have seen this movie, or it's kind of...
I don't think it's been that widely seen in general, but maybe the freaks that listen to this podcast have seen it. I don't know. Probably more Australian people have seen it. But I really do think that if you're listening to this and you don't really know, like, what's Patrick, go watch Patrick. Don't watch the 2013 remake.
Oh, I haven't seen it. Yeah, it's bad.
It's really bad. It changes things and it becomes like less subtle, like a lot of remakes, you know?
Yeah.
But I think this is like genuinely a masterpiece, and it's not, it's weird because it's an Ozploitation movie and it's like a, it's a, one of the standout examples of Ozploitation from that era, but it doesn't feel like that much of an exploitation film. Like it feels very like gently paced and very driven by like interpersonal drama.
Yeah. To me, this feels like a Nicholas Rogue, like a Don't Look Now or some other art horror from the 70s.
Yes. It does feel like art horror because we've, so let's set it up. Patrick is a man who's in a coma. Well, is he in a coma? Yeah, he's in a coma. He's kind of like, he doesn't move. And they assume that he's like a vegetable basically, but he's been in hospital for like 3 years and there's a doctor, is it Dr. Roger?
Yeah.
Who's using him to kind of, he wants to explore issues around like death. Like what's like,
when does the soul leave the body?
Yeah. So he's decided this is like the perfect person to test on, to experiment with, because Patrick is lying there like seemingly in a vegetative state, but he's physically like really healthy.
Yeah.
And it's just, he's just kind of existing. So they're doing these things on him. He's had, we see what's happened to him, like what's led to him being in that state. And he's killed his mother and her boyfriend. So already like, there's some issues going on there.
It's like not very nice to do that.
It's not that nice. But
and he does also, it in a pretty mean way too.
It's pretty fucked. It's also in a very sexual way. Like,
well.
Yeah. They're like having sex and it's very like, it's like pounding against the wall and it's like shaking his bed. Like it's really a lot.
Yeah.
But the people in the hospital don't know that he did it. They think he was just like, because then he enters this coma. They think he just was shocked and he discovered their bodies, whatever. But our entry point to this world is this nurse, Kathy, who just starts working at the hospital and starts looking after Patrick. And she's kind of like an outsider. She's new to the scene and she's got some like shit going on in her personal life. Her career is kind of unstable. Everyone's kind of always threatening that. And she's like getting in trouble a lot. She's like wanting to divorce her husband or whatever. She's got some new guy sniffing around who seems pretty shit. Like, everyone's just kind of shitty to her.
Everyone's up in her business.
They really are. But I feel like the movie really, it's called Patrick, but it's really about Kathy. We're really kind of following Kathy the whole time.
It's Kathy and Patrick. It's like John Cougar Mellencamp might have written a song called Kathy and Patrick.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah. Like Jack and Diane, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe. But she's so, I feel like she's played so beautifully and she's so compelling. Like she's such a calm figure through all of this,
mm-hmm.
even in the end, even as it ramps up, where I feel like in a lesser exploitation film, that character would have been played almost hysterical and we would be, yeah. it would be more like action driven. But she's pretty poised and thoughtful the whole time.
She's never scared, really.
She's never really scared. No, she's kind of got it together.
Yeah.
And it makes it feel different. Like, it makes the whole movie, the tone of the whole movie feel different. Because obviously it is scary. Patrick has these, like, telekinetic abilities and he's kind of a bad dude. But but our anchor
all
point
is
Kathy.
All the men in this movie are bad.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know. But it's interesting also in 1978 to have this vision of a woman who's pretty independent, doesn't really give a fuck.
Yeah, and she's so open about the fact that she's separated to the point where it's kind of like
yeah.
surprising, especially for that. What's that old lady's name?
Oh, the
Cassidy.
Yeah,
she's real nosy. She's kind of judgmental about the fact that Kathy's separated from her husband. But Kathy's like, yeah, what about it?
Kathy doesn't give a fuck. At one point, Patrick is like mad at her and she's like, she says something to him like, oh, is it because you think I'm a slut? Like, are you mad at me for being a slut? And I was like, oh, my God. Kathy really doesn't care. I think she's incredible. We're seeing some crazy lightning right now. It's really hard to focus on this.
If we get distracted. The lightning is so beautiful.
It's so spooky. But anyway, I really appreciate how artistic this movie feels and how character-driven it is. And that we have Kathy as this weird kind of character to gently bring us through the story, because Patrick himself, like, he's sometimes like astral projecting and shit. Like, he's really, it's nuts what's happening with
you
him.
You can never tell where Patrick's going to be and what he's going to do.
He's got a lot of abilities for someone who just stares. I read that the actor whose name is Robert Thompson, who played him.
I'm not sure he got paid.
I don't know.
He didn't do much.
He really didn't have to do much, but apparently he was like always in pain because his eyes had to be open all the time. True. And they had to get something to numb his eyeballs because like he was just like in agony from having his eyes always open.
Wow, I didn't even think of that. So that's kind of like in the movie they have to lubricate his eyes.
Yeah.
But you know what? In the movie, she's like, why haven't his eyes been sutured shut? I didn't know that was a thing they used to do. Do they still do that to people?
I don't
know.
I wondered about that too. They were like for his own like, you know, safety or whatever, like close them up. I don't know. That's horrifying.
Yeah.
There was a lot about in this movie that, like, it's interesting because not only is the pacing and some of the performances, not only do they make it feel like more of a considered approach to an exploitation movie, but the themes that it explores.
Yeah.
Like the way that we treat people in society who may have had traumatic injuries or may have disabilities that limit them, like in that extreme of a way. It explores euthanasia. It kind of gets to these issues that I feel like in the average exploitation movie you wouldn't ever broach.
No, those movies from what I've seen, they tend to be a little bit more about like maybe a little bit of a spectacle. And also this movie is definitely about sex.
Yeah.
But there's a lot less in the way of kind of like exploitative nudity that we might see.
We even get a dick. We get male.
Right in the beginning.
Yeah, we get male full frontal, which is like, you don't really get that often. Like, yeah, no. We get tits too, but, you know, it's kind of equal opportunity.
I used to wonder if the, like, obviously the nipples of both or all the genders are fair game.
What do you mean fair game?
Like, you can put those in a movie. Like, no one's going to bat an eyelid. Right. But I always wondered, is it like they're so much more hesitant to show the penis, but why? Because it's like it's the male gaze, obviously, but is it because the vagina is like hidden away?
I think people think of it that way. I think it honestly people do because you hear this all the time that it's like men have external genitalia and it's like because it's sticking out, protruding or whatever, which was also like relax. It's not protruding that fucking much. Like, don't flatter yourself. And then they just kind of erase. Like, I think men think of women as like Barbie dolls, that there's like nothing happening out there. But actually, there's like a lot going on. So
I remember Barbie dolls having like the plastic was like had like the letter B carved into it. Like she was wearing flesh colored knickers.
I don't know which Barbie doll you had. I don't remember them having that.
Was obviously real Mattel because it was Barbie branded.
I don't know about that because I never saw a B down there. And that's, I spent a lot of time down there. That's like the main reason to have a Barbie doll as a kid. Like, it's really focused on that area. And I never saw that. Maybe that was like one specific type of Barbie.
Modesty Barbie.
Yeah.
Never nude Barbie.
Yeah.
Anyway, what were we talking about? Oh, Patrick.
Yes. Oh, you know what I read? It said that when the film was shown, because obviously it did crap here, it did good in the US, but apparently when they showed it in the US, they like dubbed it with American accents.
They used to do that all the time. They did that to Mad Max. I kind of want to see it.
I kind of want to see it too, but I especially want to see this. It says that when it was shown in Europe, the film was given a new score by fucking Goblin.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Like, imagine how hectic that would have been. I want every movie to have a score by Goblin.
We need to put on a film festival just so we can track down the Italian dubbed version of Patrick with the score by Goblin and remaster it.
Yes, and then we can do a double feature with the unofficial sequel. There's like an unofficial
Patrick
Italian
Lives Again. Is that what it's called?
I think so, yeah.
It's Italian.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's called
Patrick Still Lives.
Patrick Still Lives, yeah. I'd love to watch that, but I feel like I want to watch it in a venue that's like befitting.
What's a befitting venue?
Somewhere in Italy.
Oh, yeah.
Or Goblin's there.
Are they alive?
I think that would be sick. I think so. I think they recently did a show, like a Suspiria.
Okay, cool.
Like a live Suspiria thing. Anyway, I do feel like this movie kind of gets into some issues of ableism and like the ethics of experimenting on live patients.
So you think that Patrick is like a sympathetic figure?
I don't think he is. I think that's what's so interesting about it. He's not like, he's pretty malicious, but yeah. like not he's in a incel. Way. He is an incel. He's fucked.
Do you think he wanted to fuck his mum, right? And that's why he did that.
I assume yeah. so. Because I don't really know why. And he must have been not that young because he's like, what, 24 in the movie. Yeah, and he's only been like in a coma for 3 years. So he was like already, he should have been out of the house. No wonder she wants to have a fucking boyfriend over.
She can have a boyfriend without her creepy 20-year-old son it's hanging
like,
around.
Yeah. Can you go somewhere? Can you go to the club so she can fucking get her groove back? Like, what are you doing? I felt bad for her.
Yeah, I felt bad for her too, especially when she died.
But anyway, I just feel like he's not a sympathetic character, clearly. He seems like at first to Kathy that he is. He inspires in her these feelings of like tenderness and caring, and obviously she's a nurse and there's something in her that feels this compulsion to take care of him. And even though everyone's telling her, no, just he's like, there's nothing going on there. She really kind of believes like, no, I think he can.
She can change him.
Yeah. So she truly believes. And so we get that aspect of it and we get to see that what Dr. Roget is doing, even though he's not trying to be malicious.
No.
He has good intentions.
He does some electroconvulsive stuff.
He does things that we can see are like not. Like clearly unethical or like they're problematic, like they make you feel like something's wrong.
Yeah.
But it does that at the same time as Patrick still being like a fucking dick. And that's what's so interesting about it. Like it's not all or nothing. Everything is kind of murky.
Do you think that Patrick negs Kathy? The first time he meets her, he spits in her face.
Maybe he does. Maybe he does neg her.
And then still she's fascinated by him, even though he spat in her face. Do you think that the relationship that starts between Kathy and Patrick is kind of like a reaction to the relationship with her ex-husband is very strange.
Yeah.
Like early on in the movie, she's in her house and he shows up and attempts to sexually assault her.
Yeah.
And she's all like, please don't do that again.
Kathy's really going through it. Everyone's like, no one's giving her a fucking moment of peace. I think what I found interesting when I was watching this movie is that, like, we see so many movies where a man finds his ideal girl and she's, like, a robot or she can't speak or she's asleep or some shit. It's like, it's always like, yeah, it's always like.
What's an example? Oh, Sleeping Beauty.
Well, that's one, but, like, it's always some bullshit. And we've talked about them on episodes before where, like, a woman can't. Yeah, she's in a coma or whatever. Like, she can't talk or she can't, like, have opinions. And suddenly a man's like, I think she's my soulmate. Like, you just don't get it. To have that kind of reversed was so nice. I was like, yeah, you know what? I see what she sees in Patrick. You always know where he is. He's not going to bother you. He just listens. He's a good listener.
But you don't really know where he is because he's all over the fucking place. He's down in the basement electrocuting that lady.
But she didn't really know that at first.
Yeah. But at the point where I was writing on my little typewriter and he was controlling my hands and making me type things I didn't type, I'd be getting the fuck out of there.
You know what, though? I think sometimes, Scott, have you ever fallen in love?
Yeah.
I think sometimes falling in love, it's like there's an element of like the paranormal there. There's an element of magic. And sometimes you think, hey, maybe this crazy thing's happening because we're fucking meant to be. Maybe this is like a sign. He can control my little hands on this typewriter because like we've got some special spark between us.
I think she was just not seeing some red flags.
Yeah, but you know what? I don't blame her because she didn't have many great prospects.
Yeah.
I think I liked the way that their relationship kind of developed in the beginning when she was figuring out that actually he is kind of there, conscious. And that kind of puts it more in the exploitation realm because she has this idea that, like, maybe he can feel. He's not supposed to be able to feel anything, but she starts, like, touching his body and seeing what he can feel. And then when she gets, like, lower, he gets an erection. Yeah. And that's her big proof is, like, he got a fucking erection when I, like, touched his dick.
But so, then someone like, rightfully points out that happens all the time and it has nothing to do with you.
That's true. But I thought that was, like, so funny.
And yeah, it is
for
funny.
A movie from 1978, like, that's, I think, the hallmark of an Ozploitation movie is that it's kind of risky and it kind of like pushes boundaries a little bit. And this movie is like so sexual.
The thing is, though, when you think of like a risque exploitation movie or an Ozploitation movie, you think it's like, it's a little bit cartoony. It's over the top.
Yeah.
Like an erection's an erection, you know, like that's such a mundane thing, but it was like also kind of a risky, brave thing to put that in the movie.
Yeah. And the way that it comes about, it's not just like,
here's my dick,
whatever.
Yeah.
It's like she's touching him and then it happens. It is this kind of almost like a sexual act between them.
Yeah.
Between somebody who's like basically comatose and this nurse. So I think that's kind of interesting. Like you don't really see that kind of dynamic. Even to have somebody who's like bedridden in that way be portrayed as a sexual person. Like
true.
You never see that.
Yeah. But he's not a sexual person in a good way. He's like, it's to me, he's such a manipulator, right?
He's
like,
yeah, he's a manipulator. I don't think that has anything to do with his sexuality though. That's just his like
sexuality
crazy.
Is expressed in such a toxic way. But yeah, you're right. Like it is unusual to see someone in that state expressing any kind of like sexual agency to any degree.
Yeah. I don't know. This is like not even relevant, but I just thought it was interesting that Robert Heltman played Dr. Roget. I just wanted to mention that.
Who's Robert Heltman?
Well, because you know how like there's like the Heltman Awards or whatever. He's just like a famous actor.
Oh.
There's actually a lot of like pretty big time actors in this movie.
I did not recognize anyone in this movie.
Everyone should go watch it. But I liked it because also I feel like a lot of people can relate to that idea of being powerless, like that feeling of powerlessness. And Patrick kind of subverts that.
Yeah, he's got the most power of anyone in the movie.
But he's constantly undermined. Mm-hmm. And it kind of reflects Kathy's position too.
There is a sense of desperation to Patrick. Like there's a point at which he tells Kathy, they're trying to kill me. Like you got to save me. It's obvious that Patrick does have a little bit of tenderness towards Kathy.
Mm-hmm.
He must like, it's like, what's that movie where Hayden Christensen has surgery, but he like, he's aware during the surgery.
I don't know.
It's like that. Like, can you imagine living your life like that for 3 years, fully conscious, your eyeballs hurt? Apparently.
People talk shit about you all the time.
People talk shit about you.
Do an experiment.
And all you can do is fucking lie there.
I know. That's the thing that, like, that's another horror of the movie. It really puts you in that position to think about, like, what that would be like.
Do you think the way Kathy talks about her relationship to her partner, it kind of, she doesn't talk about it that much, but the way she describes it is kind of like, he had all the power. There was,
yeah.
She was kind of just home all the time. He would roll over and go to sleep and she would just lie there. Do you think that she relates to Patrick in
totally.
That sense?
Totally. Yeah, I think they're both powerless, but they're both people don't give them the credit that they're due.
Yeah.
And we get to see that both of them are like driving all of the action in this world.
Mm-hmm.
But within that, within the story, nobody else really sees things that way until it's too late. And it's kind of disastrous for everybody else.
Even by the end, like in a lot of horror movies, you see there's this big revelation where they're like, oh my God, you were right. This is happening. Yeah. But even this one, it's kind of like, I still think you're a little bit crazy.
Yeah. It's really kind of like I feel like there's a real feminist message in this. And it's kind of horrifying to see how grim and bleak Kathy's life and prospects are. Like, it's just, it's not like strange. It's not like, oh, there's something in particular about her or her life that's setting her apart. It's just the fact that she's a woman and living in this time.
Yeah, it really struck me.
Working in the medical system.
When she applies for the job early on, she's asked, is Mr. Jacquard happy with you going back to work?
Yeah.
Like, who cares? He's an idiot.
I fucking love Kathy. I just think her performance is so restrained. And I think it makes a big difference in the movie.
Is she a famous lady?
I don't think she's famous. She has some name that I can't remember how to pronounce, but but I think she was good. I really liked the script as well. I think it's a really thoughtful script. There were a lot of lines that were really beautiful. I liked the line that Cassidy actually says, I think, medicine can prolong death much more effectively than it can prolong life. And I feel like that kind of gets to the heart of what is so horrific about Patrick's condition.
That's the kind of stuff that wouldn't get talked about in, like, the popular conscious until, like, was it Terri Schiavo? Was that huge, yeah. Highly publicized case where this man wanted his wife to just die because she wasn't alive, really. Mm. I don't know. If you're on one side of that argument, it's kind of impossible to see the other side as anything.
But. And it kind of gets to the heart of, like, what Dr. Roget was trying to figure out. Because that is what's so compelling about stories like this, or anytime we hear about somebody who's like in a coma or a vegetative state, it's kind of like there are so many unknowns. We can only know so much.
Yeah.
And trying to put yourself in that position or in the position of their loved ones and figure out like what makes a life worth living and what makes somebody really still there and what are we doing with modern medicine? Are we doing the right thing? Are we doing something good?
Do you think having Patrick as the villain is relevant to that? It's like we're prolonging something that is kind of like a net bad for the world?
No, because like he's so like capable, you know? He's basically living a life.
But do you think he could have a job?
I think he could be a hitman.
I think he could be a typist.
Yeah, true. He could be a stenographer.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I guess, I don't know, maybe there is something in that, the fact that he not only is like a bad person, but he seems absolutely miserable. Like there's nothing positive in his life. All he's doing is like seeking out violence. Like he's not really doing anything else.
It kind of makes me wish that the movie gave us a little bit more about his life before he was in the coma because I don't think the coma made him into this kind of person. He was obviously always that person. So did he always have that sense of entrapment? Was he always lashing out? Well, he clearly was lashing out in some way.
Yeah.
Like the coma has nothing to do with
it. Why did he even get in the coma?
I don't know. He's scared. I don't know.
And then at the end, there are a lot of questions too. So I don't know. It feels almost sometimes like his villainy is incidental to the other issues that are like brought on by his state.
Yeah.
But maybe they are married to each other. I don't know.
To me, watching this, it kind of plays out like a supervillain origin story, don't you reckon?
Yes. But then it's interesting because you know, you'd think that we're going to focus just on him and this is going to be like an evil version of like the diving bell and the butterfly.
Gosh.
That we're just going to get his story and what's gone wrong for him. But really, I felt like watching the movie, he's not that interesting. Like he's not the most interesting
He's interesting somehow. Because of how he kind of reflects and it like influences Cappy's trajectory.
He doesn't really get his own voice in the movie, like we only experience him through other people really and he's mostly just lying there, and Kathy's story is more compelling, which is like I think what makes this movie feel so different and feel more kind of like art house or whatever, because it is more about her and all the things that are happening to her, and only one of those things is this murderous guy in a coma who's making people
sometimes do she doesn't seem will. That concerned about it.
She kind of seems like, yeah, okay, that's cool, but also I got my job, I got my ex-husband, like
I got this new man.
She's got a lot to deal with. It's not really the primary concern, and I feel like as an audience member it's not either, and it's so weird. It's so interesting.
It just gives you kind of like a really complete experience of the movie. Like,
yes,
if this movie had, this movie's nearly 2 hours long, it does not feel that long. If this movie had been a little 70 minute piece of schlock, it would have been just people getting killed in really gruesome ways by Patrick, and that kind of would have been
awkward. It would have been so easy to do that too.
Yeah,
like, but the temptation would so clearly be there to just make that movie.
Yeah, but there's so much character in, especially with Kathy, like you were saying. There's just a lot kind of orbiting around.
It's a weird fucking movie. It's so bizarre to have this movie from 1978 from these filmmakers and have it be like this. Like, it's kind of stunning. Some of the shots are really pretty. Like a lot of the shots of Patrick, which I feel like are pretty iconic, with like the lights like flashing on his face and the blue and the red, and like some of the color scheme is really pretty.
The scene with the strobe light made me feel really ill.
Yeah.
So like flashing lights warning, actually.
Yeah, true. But I just think it's like it's an iconic piece of Australian cinema. And if you're interested at all in Ozploitation, we are going to do an episode on it at some point, but fucking watch Patrick.
Yeah, go watch Patrick, you idiot.
Yeah, and if you're interested in the medical system and the ethics behind, you know, keeping people alive and experimenting on people and euthanasia, if you're interested in any of that stuff, if you're interested in, like, what's a fucking soul and, like, when am I a person and when am I not, then watch Patrick.
I wonder if – I was thinking about this earlier. I wonder if medical science has – because I don't know nothing about medical science.
Mm.
I wonder if it's progressed to the point where this movie seems a bit naive now.
In what way?
Sort of like just like the
– like the ethical questions or the
– the way they talk about it and the way they – the things right. actually do to Patrick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I would fucking hope so, but honestly, I don't know.
I wouldn't count on it.
Yeah, I don't know anything about medical science either, but I know that every time I have an interaction with a doctor or a hospital, I'm left feeling like they fucking hate me.
Do they want to suture your eyes closed?
Yeah, basically. I hate doctors and I really hate the medical system and I think it's fucked. And sure, I'm sure there are good ones and, like, sometimes I interact with good ones too. But I have to interact with a lot of doctors and it's not a great system. It's not a great system, particularly for certain kinds of people. So I think I also connected with this movie because of that, because I was just like, yeah, fuck Dr. Roget, fuck Cassidy, fuck this whole damn building, except for Kathy because she's pretty nice.
And Patrick. He's really
fuck Patrick.
That's so interesting that he's such a complex character.
Yeah.
You feel sorry for him because he's in this horrible situation, but also, like, you know he's not a nice man.
Yeah, you're like, well, anyone else in that situation, that would be fucked that they're doing that. But it's just a coincidence that they happen to pick someone evil to do it too.
You get all this depth when he just lies there.
Yes.
How the fuck did they do that?
How did they make a whole movie where the villain is literally just, like, lying there with his eyes open, not moving? Like, it is a really strong script. I really liked your Letterboxd review of this.
Oh, dudes can be in a coma for 3 years and still trying to manipulate you. It's true.
Yeah, it is true.
I hate men.
All the dudes in this movie were trying to manipulate Kathy. Anyway.
An old lady.
What old lady? Oh, Cassidy.
Cassidy.
Yeah. She's a pretty famous actress. I can't remember her name. But anyway, she was amazing.
Yeah.
Everybody in this movie is, like, doing great work.
Cassidy's like a Nurse Ratched kind of thing, but with more humanity.
Yeah, more restrained. All of this movie, like, nothing is, like, over the top, which is so weird to say for an Ozploitation movie. It's like, it's still kind of edgy and subversive, but it's really kind of just delicate restrained. About it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Love it. Love Patrick. And, you know, love, honestly, 1970s Australian cinema.
Yeah. Like I mentioned before, I love Lost Weekend. No, not Lost Weekend, Long Weekend. You should also go see that. I think that – so we have this, like, kind of a canon of great Australian movies. We got your Mad Max. We got your Picnic and Hanging Rock.
Mm.
Walkabout. Fucking hate that movie. Why isn't Patrick in the conversation? Wake and Fright, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it should be. It should
absolutely be.
More in the, yes, because it's a really stunning movie.
And fucking Alvin Purple, whatever that is.
Wait, what?
There's this movie called Alvin Purple that people love.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know that one. But I hate it.
Yeah, same.
No, I agree. I think more people should watch Patrick, which is why we wanted to do this episode, to really just be like, hey, watch this. If you do watch it.
We want to know what you think.
Yeah. I'm curious to hear how, like, overseas listeners respond to this movie.
Yeah, and I'm always so fascinated about. And if you find the American dubbed version, you have to tell us.
yeah,
any Australian movie, I'm really curious to hear how people receive it because, like, fucking, we watch shit like Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris, and we lap that shit up, and it's like. That's not our culture. We watch so much American cinema and we're just like, sure. But then anytime our cinema goes international, it's like, it's baffling. People can't kind of comprehend it. I'm like, what is so insular about Australian culture that it's not translating?
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I guess if anyone can tell us what they think about this movie, that would be really interesting to know. I think it's also weird that Australian horror movies do better overseas than they do here.
Yeah, The Babadook did way better overseas.
Yeah. So that's a bit weird. I don't know what that says about us. I do think we have a lot of cultural cringe, but maybe this is far enough in the past that it's not like no immediately recognizable. Here. No. Yeah. And everyone's speaking with that funny accent.
Yeah.
Some of them have Australian accents.
Yeah.
It's a mix. It's a nice blend.
Especially that really pretty nurse. She's the most Australian.
Yeah.
She gets yelled at. Yeah.
I thought Kathy was beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
Time I was like, fuck, I get it. I get it, Patrick. I want to move her fucking hands on the typewriter. Anyway.
That's Patrick.
That's Patrick.
It's Pat. Did you ever see It's Pat, the SNL skit turned into a movie?
Oh, Pat. Is that the one? Is that that's the one that's when like
no one knows what their gender is?
You know what? I did not see that, but I watched a show called, I think it's called Work in Progress. It's this comedian made their own show.
Uh-huh.
And in that show, because this comedian is like a lesbian who's very androgynous and it's like based on her real life. And when she was growing up, people would always torment her with that character
oh.
and be like, you're Pat. So then in that show, she meets the actress who played that character.
Julia something. Yeah.
And they have this basically like series long arc where she's kind of getting her to reckon with the fact that she's like unintentionally made all these queer kids' lives miserable. It's actually really interesting. I think everyone should go watch it. But no, I didn't actually see the thing.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either. I just thought of it.
That could be the catchphrase for this movie.
It's Patrick. But Patrick, I think, is male.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think so too.
Yeah, cool. So maybe we should talk about It's Pat on an episode.
It sounds horrifying.
It does. It really does.
It sounds more horrifying than Patrick.
Yeah. But anyway, you should go watch Patrick. You should tell us on our Instagram at Spooky Bitch Gang or on our Facebook, SBG Podcast, because they don't like swearing. What you thought of it, send us an email, contact@spookybitchgang.com. Yeah, you know, whatever.
And next time we'll do a theme episode.
Yeah, we haven't decided what it is yet, but I'm really excited already.
Me too. It'll be great.
Okay. Bye.
Love you. Bye.